tomorrow all the things were gone. I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
I thank my lucky stars to be living here today,
where the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me.
And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today.
Well, thank you, Thumper, for putting that beautiful piece on again. I want to thank Lee Greenwood and the Singing Sergeants for our lead-in today. Thank you for that. Thumper, how you doing? Had a great show?
Yeah, it was a fun show. We had a good show last night as well. And ready to rock on here, so.
Okay, well, we do have a great guest today. We've got Richard Gage. He's going to be on with us for the second hour. Richard is kind of an old friend. I met him in Montana at Montana State University about, probably 12, 13 years ago, when he was just getting Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth off the ground. And I met him there. And since that's my discipline, I was a commercial building contractor and graduated in architecture about 47 million years ago. but the contractor I was doing right up until a few years ago. So I had a very, very distinct concern about 9/11, because I understood when 9/11 happened, the Twin Towers were actually being constructed when I was in college, and they were a building that we studied, or a structure that we studied in our structures class, because they were designed to take multiple jet airliner hits. 707 was the biggest commercial aircraft at the time that they were built. They were designed to be able to take three or four of those hits without even major damage to the building, irreparable damage anyway. And so when those buildings came down so easily and so systematically, let's say, it concerned me a great deal, because I knew those structures were not designed in a way that would do that. I saw the construction underway. We actually watched films on how they were building the buildings, and so I knew it wasn't coming down the way that the official story was telling it. And when I met Richard and had a chance to sit in on his 9/11 Truth video and get a chance to visit with him in person, I realized that we finally had a true professional that was assembling all the evidence to disprove the standard theory about how the Twin Towers and Building 7 came down. So we're going to cover that today. We're going to do a film that Richard did back in 2013. That's Experts Talk About the 9/11 events. And then at the end of that film, Richard will be joining us, and we'll be talking with him about his new film. We'll do a trailer on it, and that film is called 7, and it is basically a study of Building 7, which had no impacts and very minimal fires, and yet came down the same way as the Twin Towers, came down directly in its own footprint. Very typical of a controlled demolition. And University of Alaska did a study on it, and out of that study determined that there was no way that Building 7 came down the way the NIST and 9/11 report reported that they did. So we're going to get into that in the second hour. So Thumper, I guess let's go ahead and play the first video, and we'll be ready for Richard when he gets here in an hour.
Absolutely. And you know, the other thing I just like to kind of add in there, you know, they were so quick, you know, as those towers were burning and things were happening there in New York City on that day, to all of a sudden find specific evidence as to who perpetrated this horrible crime against the American people and the city of New York. And, you know, we didn't realize it at the time. You know, we just thought the news media was really on the ball, didn't we? But
which would be the first time in a long time.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. But there were a few little goofs along the way, you know, funny little things like people reporting the buildings being down and they're standing perfectly fine in the background and things like that. Yeah. And it's definitely a big, huge lie as far as I'm concerned. I'll call it that. Mm-hmm.
And not to mention the fact that NORAD had stood down and allowed all these rogue aircraft to fly all over the Northeast, in spite of the fact that they had, you know, they had a very good record of intercepting any non-terrorist controlled planes.
Yeah.
You know, they'd done that forever and never had a problem. And all of a sudden they were completely standing down and letting all these rogue aircraft fly all over, the Northeast, including Washington, D.C. And, you know, the whole thing was just so bizarre. It was just so bizarre.
And who would think that box cutters would become the nemesis of the universe, from that day forward?
Well, you and I both, served in the military, and I used to fly commercial airlines, going back and forth and carrying my M16, and then just checking into the first class. They had kind of a little box section there, a closet there, and I just checked my M16 into that. No big deal. All of a sudden, you can't even carry a pocket knife on an airplane anymore. So,
and don't try to take shampoo in a large container.
Oh, yeah.
Carry on. Good heavens.
Or a whole tube of toothpaste. They dumped my whole tube of toothpaste when I was out just not that long ago. So,
well, it sounds like you got a call, and I've got the video ready to go here, Dan. So let's
okay.
You ready to get going?
Yep, ready to go.
All right. Here we go, guys. 9/11 explosives evidence. Expert speaks out. Here we go.
How do they do that?
Mm-hmm. conspiracy theories. There are lots of them that can go on. We could speculate on that forever. What we really need to know is how those buildings came down.
My husband Steve was 48 years old when he was killed on September 11th, 2001. He was in the North Tower on the 104th floor. There are so many unanswered questions, and that's scary to me. We never had answers. Nobody ever stopped to have a scientific investigation. A scientific investigation. A scientific investigation.
Tribute lights in the New York skyline. An annual memorial to the lives lost on 9/11. Yet there's still more light that needs to shine, revealing truths that their family members deserve to know. September 11th, 2001, a day that changed history. Four planes went silent and off course. Two of those planes crashed into the World Trade Center Twin Towers. Several columns were severed, and the jet fuel ignited fires that spread over several floors. About an hour later, millions watched in shock as both towers were suddenly and rapidly destroyed, killing almost 3,000 people, for whom truth and justice may have yet to be served. Hi, I'm Richard Gage, AIA. Licensed architect of over 20 years and member of the American Institute of Architects. I'm founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, a nonprofit organization of well over 1,000 technical and building professionals. According to official government reports, the fires weakened the structural steel framing of both twin towers, leading to sudden, progressive, and total collapses. Unknown to most people, a third steel frame high-rise, World Trade Center 7, was also destroyed. Critical questions have been raised by more than 1,500 architects and engineers about the official explanations for the destruction of all three of these buildings. Along with more than 10,000 other concerned individuals, these professionals, collectively comprising more than 25,000 years of experience, have signed our petition. They're calling for a new investigation into the destruction of these three World Trade Center high-rises. This call is based on evidence that reveals a very different destruction scenario than reported by government engineers. As coherent sets of scientific facts are brought into focus by the experts, the data, and the witnesses in this film, you'll come to a much greater understanding of the events of 9/11 and will be in a position to draw your own informed conclusions. Trade Center Building 7 looms above the site of its original. Building 7 was a 47-story high-rise, not hit by an airplane. Yet it was the third modern steel frame skyscraper to collapse rapidly and symmetrically on 9/11. It was a football field away from the North Tower and sustained minor damage from falling debris. Building 7's precipitous collapse was blamed on normal office fires.
I'm Steve Barish, founder and president of Barish Architects and Associates, Inc., a 33-year-old architecture, planning, and engineering firm. One of the things that really interested me is how quickly the Tower 7 fell. It fell within 7 seconds, approximately, from top to bottom. This building was built in the mid-80s and met all the codes at the time.
From about 1965 until about 1985, most of my experience has been in a high-rise, multi-story steel buildings. NIST would have us to believe that these were was a typical office fire, scattered office fires, if you will, that brought this building down. Since the mid-60s, I've tried to follow high-rise fires because they're something we worry a lot about as we design these buildings. And I'm not aware of any high-rise building that have come down as a result of fires.
The coup de grace for me was when I found out that Building 7 had collapsed later that day. And when I saw Building 7 come down, to me, the fact that it looks like a perfect controlled demolition of an intact building. I mean, that's what I call a smoking gun.
Was the structural steel from World Trade Center 7 preserved, documented, analyzed according to standard procedures for investigating engineering failures?
400 truckloads per day of material were taken away from the World Trade Center site and sent to China for recycling.
There were laws violated in the destruction of that evidence. And for the American Society of Civil Engineers to ignore those events is extremely disturbing and is a violation, in my opinion, of their professional code of ethics.
It was contrary to the way all investigations are done. If an airplane crashes, they seal off the entire area and nobody touches anything. They move it to a secure location and they reconstruct an aircraft.
Normally, when you have a structural failure, you carefully go through the debris field, looking at each item, photographing every beam as it collapsed and every column where it is in the ground, and you pick them up very carefully and you look at each element. We were unable to do that in the case of Tower 7.
You can't do science when you are deprived of the evidence and when your hypothesis is the least valid instead of the most likely. When the most likely hypothesis in the case of Building 7 wasn't even mentioned, this is not science. It's trying to prove preconceived ideas.
Was a proper investigation performed that might have revealed the use of accelerants or explosives in World Trade Center 7's destruction?
NIST concedes that they found no evidence for explosives. So then we asked them, well, did you look? And they said, no, we did not look for explosives or residues of explosives.
Big explosion. Blew us back into the eighth floor.
I'm okay, all right? Here, hold on. You want to call your mother or something?
Just the fact that there were explosions means they need to be investigated.
Keep your eye on that building. It'll be coming down.
The building is about to blow up. Moving back. We are walking back. It's a building about to blow up.
We don't have the real story on what happened because there wasn't a proper investigation done.
World Trade Center 7 collapsed because of fires fueled by office furnishings. It did not collapse from explosives or from fuel oil fires.
As reported by the New York Times, engineers were baffled by the collapse of Building 7. Since no steel frame high-rise has ever completely collapsed due to fire, how are we to understand this mysterious event?
High-rise buildings simply do not collapse due to fire. There has never been, until 9/11, an experience where a high-rise building that was steel frame completely collapsed. There have been fires burned longer in similar structures without any collapse.
NIST claims the fires were very large, very hot, and long-lasting, when in reality, observation, which has been research by many people, shows these fires did not last very long. They were not in the locations where NIST claims they were at given times.
I'm a fellow of the American Institute of Architects.
For the 40 plus years that I've been practicing architecture, I have designed a variety of buildings from small houses to high-rise office buildings. Some of the high-rises that I've worked on are one shell and two shell here in Houston. I was project manager for a 22-story office building in Akron, Ohio. Later in the day, when World Trade Center 7 collapsed, they had already showed us pictures of a few fires in that building, and I mean, they weren't even raging. And how could that cause a building to collapse as if it were imploded? Couldn't happen.
According to lead investigator Shyam Sunder of the National Institute for Standards and Technology, NIST, World Trade Center 7 collapsed at freefall acceleration for more than 100 feet of its fall. What does the speed of the collapse reveal to us?
Essentially, in less than 7 seconds, Tower 7 came down upon itself.
It's just like taking your car keys out and just dropping them. That's how fast the building came down, for over 100 feet. And the only way you can get that is when there is zero resistance. And so what we're looking at is a building just coming straight down, falling right through itself with zero resistance. Buildings don't have zero resistance, which is why you feel comfortable walking into a building.
This building had 40,000 tons of structural steel in its structural system, and that is intended to keep it from going anywhere.
NIST is telling us that the building below it ceased to exist for the first few seconds of the collapse of the building. Well, things in physics just don't cease to exist and cease to resist the forces that are on them. The building didn't disappear so the building can fall for 100 feet at free fall speed. That's impossible. That's a violation of the fundamental law of physics that says that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
If floors fall, they tend to fall and are braced by the floor directly beneath it. And there's some delay there.
Because of redundancy, because of all the other columns in the building that were not affected.
Even if a floor were to collapse, it still wouldn't be able to collapse all of the connections simultaneously at the rate that it did without secondary explosions.
We might anticipate that an unevenly damaged building would fall over. Yet, videos of the collapse of Building 7 show a fairly symmetrical fall. How do we make sense of this?
If the buildings had come down by fire, we would have seen a more natural progression of collapse.
And clearly, a more asymmetrical pattern should have been present.
The symmetry is the smoking gun. It cannot happen that when you have asymmetric damage, you will get a perfectly symmetrical collapse.
The exterior columns on the outside, as well as on the inside, at the bottom would have to be severed almost at the same time.
I worked for Controlled Demolition Incorporated, CDI, the top-rated explosive demolition firm in the world. What I saw, it was a classic implosion. The center of the core, the penthouse area, starts to move first, and then the building follows along with it. That's another indicator that this report is very suspect.
When it's all finished, the outside walls are piled one on top of the other right in the middle of the building. Just like a house of cards if it were coming down.
According to NIST, the failure occurred at column 79 on level 12. This means basically they're talking about a single columnar collapse or failure that resulted in a total collapse of the building. That just does not make any sense.
The explanations from FEMA and from NIST don't add up. But there is enormous circumstantial evidence, circumstantial and actually physical evidence as well, that would lead us to a different conclusion. And the conclusion is controlled demolition.
Dit is controlled demolition.
Zeker weten.
Zeker weten. Er is nagesprongen. Dit is in opdracht gebeurd. Dit heeft een team gedaan van experts.
Building 7 to me is really what gives it away. Because that's a classic case of controlled demolition.
This is the original site of the World Trade Center Twin Towers. Construction is now underway where dramatic new facilities are being erected. Just 10 years ago, the planes hit the towers, cutting through some exterior and interior supporting structural steel columns. The fuel from the planes ignited office fires across several floors. According to the official reports, the structural steel frame was weakened and failed, causing a total progressive collapse of each tower. Does the official explanation make sense? Was there a comprehensive investigation that examined all of the evidence?
I walked into the office, and the first words that I heard was, a plane's just run into the World Trade Center. And my initial thought was, well, that's okay. It's built to withstand a 707.
It did not seem possible that these towers that were designed to withstand the impact of a 707 could possibly collapse in such a short order of time from the time that they were hit.
The majority of the jet fuel was burnt up instantly in the big fireball, and it was gone. The fires that were left were office furnishings and carpet and things like that. A lot of things in these kind of buildings have to be fire resistant by nature. It's required by code. So there really isn't a whole lot of fuel in there to begin with.
The media portrayed these fires as being extremely hot, but the fires were not that hot in World Trade Center 1 and 2. If you look at the NIST zone data, you could see this. And to use our own powers of observation, you could tell by seeing these fires and seeing black smoke come out the windows, that means that the fires were oxygen-starved, and it was incomplete combustion. And so it was a low-temperature fire.
The heat from the fire supposedly softened the steel and thereby brought the buildings down. If you have a flame at 750 degrees, you can hold that flame under a steel beam forever, and you'll never reach a high enough temperature to bend steel, let alone melt it. So immediately I knew at that point that the official explanation was dead wrong.
Rather than a slow, groaning collapse that we might anticipate, the Twin Towers show in the videos a very rapid, sudden onset of destruction. What does this imply?
NIST claimed that the upper section of each of the towers crushed the lower section. However, when you watch video closely, in the case of World Trade Center 1, you'll see that the upper section disintegrates itself. It appears to be a controlled demolition of its own, of the upper section.
The top section, pushing on the bottom section, it's going to meet equal forces as it goes. Both sections are going to be demolished at the same rate. So by the time you've crushed up 15 stories below it, the top 15 stories are also going to be crushed. And so there's nothing left now to crush the rest of the building. You're looking for a jolt, that this thing, if it actually comes down and hits, you should be able to see the point at which they actually impact, because it would actually slow down the motion of the falling block.
Before the tower started collapsing from the top, the antennas started to fall. And the antenna, of course, was over the middle of the elevator shafts. I'm very familiar with the interior structure that surrounded the elevator shafts and the accessibility which the elevator companies had 24/7.
It wouldn't be a problem once you gained access to the elevator shafts. Then a team of loading experts would have access to all the core columns and beams. The rest could be accomplished at that point by just the right kind of explosives for the job at hand.
The only way that I can see that the towers could have collapsed is that the interior columns were compromised.
Over 100 first responders reported sounds of explosions and flashes of light at the onset of destruction of both towers. These were not discussed in the NIST report. What did these eyewitnesses actually see and hear?
As we were getting our gear on and making our way to the stairway, there was a heavy-duty explosion
inside the lobby.
We stuck on the stairs for a while. We finally got down to the lobby. Then we get to the lobby, it was this big explosion.
There were numerous secondary explosions taking place in that building. There were continuous explosions.
Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was like, as if they had detonated.
As if they were planned to
take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
And it just started going pop. It just started going boom, 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 boom. And he goes, how fast? I go like firecrackers.
They're reporting exactly what I would expect. You're hearing boom, 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 waves of explosions going off, not one massive big boom.
There's so many videos of witnesses from that day that report explosions. There's radio transmissions from the FDNY. We have the transcripts that were recorded, you know, back in 2001 of all these firefighters and first responders reporting explosions.
This testimony should have caused the presumption that there was a good chance explosive residue would be found and justified testing for it rather than the opposite.
It doesn't look like a collapse. It's like a huge mushrooming, billowing kind of an event. That whole thing looks nothing like a building falling down. It's a building being blown up. That's what the physics shows.
Yet they refuse to consider the possibility of explosives or some other form of demolition device could have been used to cause the collapses of the towers. And the fact that controlled demolition is consistent with all the available technical evidence. And the response to that request for correction is NIST simply saying they're unable to provide a full explanation for the total collapse, even though that was their task given to them by Congress.
FEMA documents a 1,200-foot diameter debris field around each tower. Videos show multi-ton steel sections of hundreds of individual steel pieces ejecting out of the towers at 60 miles an hour for a distance of 600 feet. They also show clouds of debris pulverized in mid-air and isolated explosive ejections as many as 60 stories below the so-called crush zone. Videos also show the near total destruction of both towers. What does all this tell us about the forces and energies involved in the destruction?
Large multi-ton beams were hurled hundreds of yards laterally. Gravity works vertically, not laterally.
Something's happening to throw these things horizontally at those kinds of speeds. And here it is trailing white smoke the whole time. It really is indicative of some kind of explosion.
The individual explosions that I noticed 20 and 30 and 40 stories below the collapsing structure.
And naysayers tend to say, well, that's just air being blown out the windows. I mean, it doesn't really work to say it's just air pressure. And I estimated these are coming out faster than 100 miles an hour.
As an architect, I would expect to see larger portions of the building floors, the decking, the steel decking, the concrete topping, much larger remnants of what the structural components of this building was.
What happened to the concrete?
The concrete was pulverized, and I was down here Tuesday, and it was like you were on a foreign planet. All of Lower Manhattan, not just this site, from river to river, there was dust powder, 2-3 inches thick. The concrete was just pulverized.
In its report on World Trade Center 7, which came out in May of 2002, FEMA documents in Appendix C steel that has been melted and even partially evaporated, resembling Swiss cheese. What are we to make of this?
I'd like to know why NIST excluded the evidence of melting steel. Well, why is this not included? Why is this forensic evidence not being included in the report?
First of all, let's go back to your basic premise that there was a pool of molten steel. I know of absolutely nobody, no eyewitness who said so, nobody who's produced it.
You'd get down below and you'd see molten steel. Molten steel running down the channel rails. Like you're in a foundry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like lava.
Like lava.
From a volcano.
There actually melted beams where it was molten steel that was being dug out.
Underground, it was still so hot that molten metal dripped down the sides of a wall.
It's this fused element of steel, molten steel and concrete and all of these things all fused by the heat into one single element.
And they pulled off a big block of concrete, and there was a little river of steel flowing.
Many witnesses, firemen, and lots of people described the flowing molten metal, iron or steel, at extremely hot temperatures. And John Gross categorically denied their observations, so that because their observations don't fit his preconceived notion, he not only ignored evidence, he denied evidence.
In an office fire, you cannot generate enough heat to melt steel. And yet we have evidence of molten iron in the microspheres, in the rubble pile, and the metal pouring out of the side of the tower.
So what is this molten metal? It's a direct evidence for the use of thermite.
An incendiary used by the military? Thermite is a compound of iron oxide and aluminum, which when ignited sustains an extreme heat reaction, creating molten iron. In just 2 seconds, thermite can reach temperatures over 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit, quite enough to liquefy steel. We know that open-air fires cannot burn hot enough to melt steel, but metal had melted at the base of the towers.
I found a pore in the steel that had pure sulfur.
There's a government theory that calcium sulfate from gypsum boards was the source of sulfur, and that's wrong. Calcium sulfate cannot undergo any kind of a chemical reaction that produces the element sulfur, and we're not dealing with any kind of compound of sulfur. When we're talking about sulfidation, we're dealing with the element sulfur.
There's a version of thermite called thermate, which has sulfur in the thermate. And what the sulfur does is it's sort of like salt on ice.
And it just basically makes the steel melt at a lower temperature. And if you do a search on Google for thermite and building demolition, you can find devices that have been fabricated and invented that use thermite for building demolitions.
In the case of thermite cutting charges, you would have heard far less noise since they are worked by thermal heating, melting of the steel, rather than an explosive cutting as in RDX charges.
Overflights had detected with infrared camera 1400 degree Fahrenheit hotspots on the surface of Ground Zero. And that being there for a week, you know, indicates that there was something very hot going on below the surface.
So thermite would also explain potentially the fact that the fires could not be put out at Ground Zero. The fires lasted for quite a while, but most importantly, they were deep within the pile, where people would expect that the environment was oxygen-starved. And thermite could explain this because it has its own oxidant within. It's actually the metallic oxide that provides the oxidant to allow the incendiary thermite reaction to occur, even underwater.
As much as 6% of the World Trade Center dust consisted of tiny, previously molten iron spheres. What does this tell us about the temperatures generated in the tower's destruction?
When the USGS collected samples of the World Trade Center dust, they found the iron microspheres. Insofar, the USGS does not have a valid explanation for the presence of these iron microspheres.
So what do the microspheres contain? Iron is the main element, and then it has smaller portions of aluminum, sulfur, a trace of manganese. Most of them are less than about a tenth of an inch in diameter, and they're spherical. And they're found in all of the dust blown out of the buildings during collapse, no matter where in Manhattan that dust is picked up.
You must have had a much hotter heat source for you to get 2,700 degrees Fahrenheit in order to melt the iron to get these molten spheres. Your heat source must be something like a chemical reaction, an exothermic chemical reaction that reacts, in the case of thermite, reacts at 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit.
My contention, based on finding thermite residue in the dust, is that it happened before. It didn't happen after in the fires that ensued in the rubble pile afterwards. It's all the characteristics of the microspheres, along with what I see in the attack of the beams that were actually found, tell me that thermite was involved in melting those steel beams.
Ashes of the World Trade Center devastation rises the Freedom Tower, whose foundation, however, is shrouded in question. For example, in the World Trade Center dust, an international team of scientists find an advanced form of highly energetic nanothermite composites. What is it, and where does it come from?
In the dust, we found what we characterize as unreacted thermitic material in the shape of some very tiny red-gray chips. And in the reaction, they produce molten iron, which is the prime indication of a thermitic reaction. And such a reaction can be used to destroy steel structures. What we have found is a modern version of thermite, which we call nanothermite, which is produced in a different way. It is not just two powders being mixed. The material is actually built from the atom scale up. We call it the bottom-up procedure, which is what you do in nanotechnology. The ingredients are much smaller, which means they're reacting faster and they are more easily ignited.
The primary elements in the red material are aluminum, iron oxide, as well as silicon and carbon. The iron oxide appears in faceted grains, approximately 100 nanometers across. The aluminum appears in thin platelets, about 40 nanometers thick. This is discussed in our paper in the Open Chemical Physics Journal, published in April of 2009. But so far, none of these papers have been refuted in the literature, the scientific literature. So that means they are unchallenged in the scientific sense. They stand as an indictment, really, of the official story of 9/11.
We also took paint that came off of the WTC steel and looked at that in the SEM and did a compositional analysis of that and found that it was not similar to the red-gray chip or the red layer of the red-gray chips.
This cannot be paint. Paint does not have these exotic properties. It's impossible.
This is material that is of military use that really shouldn't be there.
You don't need to be an engineer or an architect to see what happened to those buildings.
Any honest investigator would be looking at this and looking for explosives and so forth. And this investigation didn't go there. They just would not look for explosives. This has been the work of independent researchers, not NIST.
So the preconceived notion of NIST is that there's no evidence for explosives, and so there's no point in looking. That is the most unscientific thing that you can possibly think of, not to look because you don't expect to find evidence. And in fact, the evidence is overwhelming that these red-gray crystals are very high temperature incendiaries. They state these conclusions for which there's virtually no evidence, and then they ignore conclusions that can be drawn from the evidence.
The only way that a building can accelerate as it collapses is by having pre-engineered, precisely timed, and precisely placed explosives. In other words, controlled demolition.
We have a professional responsibility, and I urge every engineer and architect and demolitions expert and anybody that has any knowledge in this field to examine the evidence and stand up and be counted, because the rest of the world is depending upon us.
We know we've been lied to about 9/11. We don't know for sure who did it. We don't know exactly how they did everything. And that's why we need a new investigation to find out. We do know that there was a massive cover-up, that there was evidence hidden and destroyed. The American people absolutely need the truth of 9/11.
Some kind of consciousness raising on my part before I was willing to look at the possibilities. And really, you need to go where the evidence leads.
Let's look at it objectively. Let's look at the evidence, not these fabricated computer models and hearsay and all these predetermined conclusions. Let's really open it up again and investigate this thing properly, and then come to conclusions.
I strongly support an independent investigation that would be independent of the government, independent of all of the influences that obviously were in effect during the NIST investigation.
What happened on 9/11 is not something that is just gonna go away. This is very pertinent to us today. I wish to further the investigation, and I want to make a difference because I want this to be a safe and better place for my children.
Sign the petition on the Architect and Engineers 9/11 Truth website, mainly because I wanted to stand behind the families that lost people on 9/11. the 9/11 truth movement was started by the families that lost loved ones on that day. And they were all out there alone, screaming for help. And our own country was ignoring them and ignoring their needs and not taking care of them the way we should have after that happened.
Most of us who have lived with the events of 9/11 have, as a result, experienced some kind of trauma. It can be very difficult to come to terms with what actually happened at the World Trade Center. In fact, someone told me recently, "I wouldn't believe what you're telling me even if it were true." Our petition signers, with psychological expertise, have stepped forward to offer their insight. While this segment is clearly outside the knowledge base of the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, these experts in psychology highlight their valuable experience for us as to why this evidence can still be so difficult for people to accept.
As we know, the horrors of what happened on 9/11 were televised all over the world, and they were televised, in fact, live. We witnessed the deaths of almost 3,000 of our fellow Americans. We know this had a very severe and traumatic impact on a large majority of the population. At this point, we have 9 years of hard scientific evidence that disproves the government theory about what happened on September 11th, and yet people continue to be either oblivious to the fact that this information exists or completely resistant to looking at this information. So the question becomes, why? Why is it that people have so much trouble hearing this information? From my work, I think we would be remiss not to look at the impact of trauma.
Many people respond to these truths in a very deep way. Some have a visceral reaction like they've been punched in the stomach. To begin to accept the possibility that the government was involved is like opening Pandora's box. If you open the lid and peek in a little bit, it's going to challenge some of your fundamental beliefs about the world.
If we can think of our worldview as being sort of our mental and emotional home, I think all of us will do just about anything to defend our homes, to defend our families. And so I see that with people, and I saw that with myself when my brother tried to talk with me about it, of don't mess with me, don't mess with my home, don't mess with my comfort with how things are. About a week later, I read a lengthy article by Professor Griffin about why he believes the official account of 9/11 cannot be true. And it was a very well-researched article. It was in my office at the time. I sat there and I felt my stomach churning. I thought maybe I was going to be sick. And I leaped out of my chair and ran out the door and took a long walk around the block, around several blocks, and just broke down. I understand now that what was happening was my worldview about my government being in some way my protector, almost like a parent, had been dashed, and it was like being cast out into the wilderness, I think is the closest way to describe that feeling. And I sobbed and I sobbed, felt like the ground had completely disappeared beneath my feet. And I knew at some point during the walk that I knew that I was going to have to become active in educating other people about this, that for me to retain any sense of integrity, I was going to have to take some action. I couldn't just let something like this go.
When we hear information that contradicts our worldview, social psychologists call the resulting insecurity cognitive dissonance. For example, with 9/11, we have one cognition, which is what the official story of 9/11, what our government told us, what our media repeated to us over and over, that 19 Muslims attacked us. On the other hand, we have what scientists, researchers, architects, engineers are now beginning to tell us, which is that there is evidence that shows that the official story cannot be true. So now we've lost our sense of security. We are starting to feel vulnerable. Now we're confused.
9/11 truth challenges the beliefs that our country protects us and keeps us safe, and that America is the good guy. When your beliefs are challenged, fear and anxiety are created. In response to that, our psychological defenses kick in, and they protect us from these emotions. Denial, which is probably the most primitive psychological defense, is the one most likely to kick in when our beliefs are challenged.
And it's a very, very uncomfortable state to be in. And eventually, our mind shuts off. Just like when a computer is overloaded, our minds get overloaded. We can't handle it anymore, and we shut down.
And what some of us will tend to do is deny the evidence that's coming our way and stick to the original story, the official story, and to try to regain our equilibrium in that way. Another thing we can do is decide to look at the conflicting evidence and be sincere and be open-minded and look at both sides of the issue and then make up our own mind about what reality is. Here are a few of those spontaneous initial reactions to hearing the contradictory evidence about 9/11.
I don't want to know the truth, or I'd become too negative and psychologically go downhill. I'm not sure I want to know. If this is true, then up would be down and down would be up. My life would never be the same.
Fran, I refuse to believe that that many Americans could be that satanically treasonous. Someone would have talked. But these are beliefs. They are not scientific facts. But these beliefs do keep us from looking at the empirical evidence. Whenever we say, I refuse to believe, we can be sure that the evidence that's coming our way is not bearable and that it's conflicting with our worldview much too much. As I thought about all of these responses, I realized that what is common to every one of them is the emotion of fear. People are afraid of being ostracized, they're afraid of being alienated, they're afraid of being shunned, they're afraid of their lives being inconvenienced, they'd have to change their lives, they're afraid of being confused, they're afraid of psychological deterioration, they're afraid of feeling helpless and vulnerable. And they're afraid that they won't be able to handle the feelings that are coming up. None of us want to feel helpless and vulnerable.
Healing comes through facing the truth, experiencing it, allowing the feelings to come in, so that if there are feelings of fear that perhaps these events were caused by something that we haven't thought about yet, dark elements within our society, for example, we'll let that come in and explore it. Let the light shine on whatever happened. This will be the most healing process.
After World War II, part of the way that Jewish people honored the dead was by making sure that the truth was known and that the value of these people was respected. Not pursuing the truth about 9/11 disrespects the value of the life of the people that died. Thinking that we're above such things, that it could happen in other countries, but it couldn't happen here, that's a lack of humility, and that's excessive pride. And so not being able to see our dark side or our weaknesses is the most dangerous thing.
A feature of American history that makes us particularly liable to this pride is this notion that's called exceptionalism, that America is the exceptional nation. And that began from the beginning as this country was formed. The people would say, well, there was so much evil in the European country, so much cheating, so much lying, so much using the people for the ruler's purposes, but not in America. We have leaders that are free from those sins. So I think this has made 9/11 particularly difficult for Americans.
So we need to understand that questioning is patriotic. Questioning is what we're supposed to do as citizens. That's our duty.
When something like 9/11 happens, we need to be sure that we have a real investigation into who the perpetrators are, and then we need to be sure that those perpetrators are held legally accountable. It's part of the healing process on the individual level as on the collective level. We need the truth in order to heal.
My name is Bob McElvain. I'm from right outside the Philadelphia area, and I'm the father of Bobby McElvain, who was killed in the lobby of the North Tower on September 11, 2001. Bobby was one of the first 10 bodies found. We took him home that week. We were one of the few. I finally found the doctor who examined him. All his injuries were in the face, the front of his face was blown off. Massive cuts in his chest and his right arm were blown off. To me, that means explosion.
What happened on September 11th was the tragedy where Neil was on Flight 175 and it crashed into the second tower. And I can't imagine what happened to him.
So my brother was my best friend. David has always been a firefighter. My brother went in to save people's lives. I'm a family member trying to find out the answers to the murder of 3,000 plus people.
I'm Jane Policino. My husband Steve was 48 years old when he was killed on September 11th. I have no identification. You know, why is that? It seems to me we should know why over 1,000 victims there are no trace for, and no identification, no trace of over 1,000 victims.
Just a few years ago, they were still finding body parts on the roofs of buildings. What is that?
We should know why there are over 700 bone fragments found on the top of Deutsche Bank building, less than a half an inch long. We should have that information. Why were they up there? Why weren't they found? What kind of explosion was there?
And the explosions were brought up many a times, talking to firemen, talking to medics, talking to everyone. Everybody talked about these explosions.
I want the officials that are in power to ask the questions. I want answers.
Please look at architects and engineers. People all around the world, scientists all around the world are questioning this. When you bring science into the equation, that's so important because you can't argue against science. And there's some deep, deep explaining to do.
The bottom line is that it needs to be investigated properly.
We will never heal. This country will never, ever, ever forget that day. We have to demand a new investigation. I want justice here.
The forensic evidence that you've seen is very real. New light has been shown. A third beam now reaches into the pitch black sky and stands in for the still officially unexplained freefall destruction of the World Trade Center Building 7. The obvious dark truth about Building 7 may very well provide the key to justice for the victims of family members of the destruction of the Twin Towers.
The country owns this. We were all victims. You all should want answers. It's not just ours, not just mine. We all lost something that day.
Okay, fantastic movie. Richard, great to see you, my friend. It's been a while. I think the last time we were together was, if I'm not mistaken, it was in Hartford, Connecticut here a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the Red Pill Expo.
Right.
Great to be back again, Dan.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was looking forward to this interview because all I can say is that it has been so long and you worked so hard to get people to just wake up to the reality of the world that we're living in. And we're seeing it now. We're seeing the results of all this cognitive dissonance, all the really contempt for our Constitution and our way of life by leadership, and the fact that what's going on right now in our country, it started long before 9/11, but 9/11 was a watershed event because the Patriot Act and many of the things that came into play as a result of 9/11 have accelerated this loss of freedom that we're seeing right now. And I have to laugh about this, but Sean Hannity was talking about the election fraud of the election past November. And he said, we need another 9/11 commission to really look at this election fraud. And all I can say is, boy, you don't need another 9/11 commission unless you want to cover it all up.
Exactly. So, yeah, that was a whitewash.
Yeah, they'll get the president of Dominion as one of the investigators.
Oh, God.
Right. Exactly. Well, I have to tell you, this is a fascinating film. The whole work that you've done, I think I met you, I believe it was about 2009 in Bozeman, Montana, when you were just getting kind of the 9/11 for architects and engineers for 9/11 truth off the ground. And I think I met you on your first tour that you were doing around the country. And it's been a great experience ever since, because you are bringing something to the American people that very few people in this country have the guts to do. And I have to applaud you for having the guts to stand up and do the right thing no matter what.
Thank you, Dan. It's not me. There's something inside of me that will not give up. I was angry that we were betrayed. I mean, I was lied to, Dan, on a massive scale. And maybe for whatever reason, I just can't let it go. I'm a bulldog. Not till we have a real investigation that exposes the crime of the century.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. I know the last time we did an interview, you were working with a firm, a group of attorneys from back in New York and in that area, trying to expose this in the court system and get a fair hearing in court. What happened to that effort?
Yeah, we have submitted a petition for a grand jury investigation. We had 60 exhibits that we had submitted, and we received a response from the attorney general in Manhattan, the U.S. attorney in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And he says, we will comply with the law, which requires them to submit this to a special grand jury. And this was more than a year ago. So we have submitted a mandamus action, which demands of the judge that he demand of the U.S. attorney that he prove the progress that has been made in meeting that law. So there's been a motion to dismiss based on lack of standing. They're alleging that we have, and we have responded to that. And it just takes a lot of time, unfortunately, to get through the legal loops here. And now, interestingly enough, we have, of course, a different U.S. attorney in Manhattan. And the U.S. attorney we now have Merrick Garland as the U.S. attorney general. And interestingly enough, he was one of a panel of three judges that dismissed our case And so now we're appealing it based on the fact that he was appointed to the actual position, the Attorney General of the United States. Well, that's who we're suing, is the Attorney General, basically. Well, that's a different case. That's the FBI lawsuit case, which has a similar set of motions and lack of standing, alleged lack of standing. So these two cases are still in appeal.
I see. Okay. Well, that's and at the time that you filed those cases, President Trump was obviously in office at that time. I always knew that he was a bit of a 9/11 truther himself, but I was very disappointed that nothing ever really happened when he was president to try to expand the whole 9/11 truth movement.
Well, I was disappointed too. My expectations weren't as high as yours, perhaps, because while he did speculate early on, as many did who were awake and who saw what was happening in those towers, that explosions were used to bring down the towers. The enormous political pressure that he'd been under for his entire term and still would surely have kept him from taking a political leap and leveraging himself on behalf of the 9/11 truth movement. I mean, he had enough trouble. I actually didn't expect him to take that stand, which is a very risky stand for any politician.
Well, it certainly would be against the status quo, but let me ask you this, and I don't know what the percentages are, but I know that more Americans now than ever are convinced that 9/11 was a false flag event. And do you know what the percentages are? My understanding, it's over half of the American people want a new investigation into 9/11. And it seems to cross both sides of the political spectrum.
It does. It's very interesting. It's not a right or left issue. 50% seems ambitious in terms of I don't think that many people are demanding or even wanting an investigation. But we have evidence that a third of Americans do. We've done polls over the years, and all of them suggest that when shown the collapse of Building 7, the third skyscraper that collapsed on 9/11 that wasn't hit by an airplane that we saw earlier in this film this morning, they know that something's wrong. They know that looks like the old hotels in Las Vegas. They know that three planes can't bring down, two planes bring down three buildings. It just doesn't work like that. They know that a free fall acceleration means that, you know, all the columns in the building gave up virtually at once. Well, that doesn't happen by fire, especially the few small scattered fires that we had in that building. And it's never happened by fire in the history of 100 years of skyscrapers. We've had dozens of much longer, larger, and hotter fires in these buildings, and not one of them has brought down a steel frame skyscraper.
Yeah, we've seen that. The in China, in Spain, in Brazil, around the world, where they've had Philadelphia, where they've had very, very hot fires over many, many floors, and none of those buildings were permanently damaged in any way. As a matter of fact, they were all rebuilt. By my understanding, there wasn't one that was torn down as a result of these office fires, and they were hot. That can't remember the name of it, but the China fire that happened in, I believe it was in Beijing, that it burned for, I don't know, 4 days, extremely hot fire, white hot fire, and it didn't it didn't bring the building down.
It was hot, and that building has been remodeled now.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, I know that one of the things that you're concerned about that we've talked about before is how they have so desperately covered up all the facts through the NIST and the 9/11 Commission report. And what they did was they ignored all the facts, and that was brought out very well in this movie. They not only ignored the facts, but they intentionally shied away from them and tried to cover them up. And the idea that nano thermite was used in the destruction of these buildings is pretty conclusive evidence that that it was all throughout the area. And the fact that they picked up dust, you know, a half a mile away that had nano thermite in it. Pretty hard to ignore this. Have you had any luck at all in dealing with the NIST people in trying to reopen investigations?
Not yet. We have submitted two requests for corrections, which you can submit with agencies that commit fraud, as we have shown that NIST did. And our second request for correction was based on the finite element analysis, which Professor Leroy Halsey led with his team of PhDs, researcher associates, and at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. So for the last 4 years, he's engaged in a $300,000 study that has used the exact elements, properties of the steel and the concrete and so forth that NIST used, comparing apples to apples, doing the computer analysis of the cause of the collapse that NIST was tasked by Congress to complete, but which they failed miserably to do so, confirming that that building was brought down by normal office fires. So the University of Alaska has alternatively proven that that could not have happened, and that fire behaved completely differently inside that building than NIST alleged, and that fire could not have caused the initial failure, much less the subsequent progressive collapse that NIST claimed happened, which is completely violated by any rational observation of the video of the collapse of this building. What they found in this study was that all the columns had to fail at once. The interior partitions followed a second and a half later by the exterior partitions, columns. And mm-hmm. and so then that's what they do in controlled demolition. They take out the inside first so it pulls the outside in on top of it.
Right.
It was actually quite a beautiful controlled demolition. When you watch the video of it, it's the largest one ever performed, in fact. So this was not done by amateurs, and it sure as heck was not done by fire. Mm-hmm. And witnesses heard explosions before the building came down. I mean, how easy does it have to get? And there's evidence of thermite in the case of Building 7 incendiaries, which are used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. So we have the evidence in the video of the building collapsed itself with a complete collapse all the way down to the ground symmetrically in under 7 seconds. Mm-hmm. The building falling suddenly, smoothly. That's one of the features of controlled demolition. There's no halting or hesitation as, you know, one floor hits another. The building also exhibits that falls like a house of cards. This was a moment resisting steel frame structure where the columns and beams are very rigidly welded to each other. If there was a collapse, it would have been 20, 30 stories high,
right?
Not four stories folded in on each other like a house of cards, where obviously all the columns and beams had to have been severed one from another. The evidence in the collapse also exhibits rapid expansion of cauliflower-shaped heat clouds, which is caused only by intense heat, in this case due to the ignition of these incendiaries, which race out 35 miles an hour in every direction away from Building 7. This is an indication of incredible amount of heat. And there was only a couple of fairly small fires in this building, which surely would have been extinguished by the mechanical action of the collapse itself. So where is all this heat coming from? Well, what we just showed in the film is that there's evidence of pools of molten iron in this building, and that's indicative of the use of incendiaries, which leave behind in the aftermath of a ignition of incendiaries, you have 4,000 degree molten iron. Well, that's what they found in all the World Trade Center dust, is also small droplets of molten iron. We talked about that in the film as well. And these can only be the result of thermite incendiaries, which leaves not only molten iron droplets, the droplets, because molten liquids or any liquid under aerosolized conditions produces a sphere, small spheres. That's what raindrops are, in fact. But out of a spray bottle, you'd see billions of these small spheres. Well, in the case of molten iron, they cool and they fall. And that could be also what is responsible for the toasting of the tops of the cars surrounding the World Trade Center, which I don't remember if we had included that image in this particular video or not, but it's an uncanny image. I mean, what in the world is causing a whole parking lot full of cars, to the tops of which are just toasted? Well, cooling or liquid molten iron falling on them is certainly a possibility. But NIST never examined the possibility of, or the hypothesis of, controlled demolition with incendiaries, even though all this evidence and eyewitnesses are hearing explosions before the onslaught of the collapse of this building. It should have been the first hypothesis that they seriously examined, because the collapse itself looks exactly like the old hotels in Las Vegas when they bring them down. A fire is a completely unprecedented hypothesis, so it would have required extraordinary evidence, for which they provided absolutely none, other than the fact that there were a few small scattered fires in this building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, one of the things that I noticed in the Twin Towers is the fact that just prior to the collapse, that the fires in the upper floors were very oxygen deprived. The smoke that was coming out of the building was very, very black, which indicates it's a cold fire, not a hot fire.
Yeah.
And people say, well, the jet fuel was so hot, but I know jet fuel is nothing more than kerosene and in fact has a fairly low flash point. And if you look at the footage of when those planes hit the building, about 90% or more of the jet fuel exploded in midair, because the wings of the planes were sheared off as they went into the building. And that's where all the jet fuel is in the wings of the plane. And so when the plane entered the building, it took the wings off, and that's where most of the fire ended up outside the building.
Well, I think the jet fuel and most of the wing went into the building and came out the other side. That's where the explosion of fireball was.
Oh, I see.
And even NIST acknowledges that 90% of the fuel burned up outside the building. The rest was gone in 10 minutes. So all the jet fuel did was to start the fire. And even jet fuel itself, the manufacturer, ME Petroleum of jet fuel, says that jet fuel only burns 600 degrees Fahrenheit in open air. So, you know, it takes quite a machine to get temperatures up to 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit, which is what is the minimum temperature to begin to melt steel, and much less, and also iron. Which is what is actually found. The pools of molten material are iron, and that's what's documented in these meteorites that they pulled up and in the slag from the ends of the beams that were studied through X-ray energy dispersive spectroscopy by Stephen Jones, former nuclear physicist at Brigham Young University. So you have the evidence in the ends of the steel beams of thermite, which is iron, molten iron, and even aluminum, indicating an unclean incendiary reaction. You have the author of the original FEMA report, Jonathan Barnett, citing that the ends of the beams were partly evaporated. Mm-hmm. In extraordinarily high temperatures. Well, it takes 4,000 degrees to evaporate steel. That is the temperature at which thermite burns. So we have the evidence to account for all of the phenomena that occurs here, and the official story can't account for any of it. Even the initiation of collapse that NIST came up with, where floors were sagging due to those incredibly hot fires, which you just debunked yourself, Dan. But let's say they were hot and they sagged these floor trusses, which spanned 60 feet in the case of the Twin Towers on two sides. Well, that then pulled in the perimeter columns, because they were pulled in. The video shows that. But the question is, what's pulling them in? But NIST says that apparently they pulled in all the way around, almost equally around the building. And then the top part drove the rest of the building down to the ground and then destroyed itself. Mm-hmm. Which theory completely violates the laws of the conservation of momentum. There's an equal and opposite destructive force when two bodies collide. And it doesn't matter if you drop one body on top of the other, i.e. this heavy section of building in the case of the North Tower, 15 stories. That's the lightest part of the building.
It's right.
Very thin steel relative to the thicker steel, 2 inches thick at middle and solid steel almost at the base. So, you know, a Volkswagen can't destroy a Mack truck. There's an equal and opposite destructive force. So that upper part would have been destroyed. And in fact, you watch the videos and that's exactly what's happening. With the upper part is being destroyed. It doesn't drive the rest of the building down. It is destroyed in the first 3 seconds. You can see it in our video. And in fact, you just did. And what happens after that is additional explosions hurling these 4 and 8 ton structural steel sections every direction at 60 to 80 miles an hour laterally. We know gravity works down, but here we got lateral distribution of almost all the steel. 99% of it is hurled away up to 600 feet in every direction, impaling itself in these buildings. So when we saw that in the film, It's just direct evidence of high energy explosives in this case. And that is so we would ask ourselves, well, if the steel, 100,000 tons of steel, is outside the perimeter of the building, and I mean way outside, mm-hmm. what's crushing the building? We might ask ourselves, well, is it maybe it's the concrete. That's what crushed the building, the concrete floors. You know, there's 110 of them, each of them an acre in size. But in the aftermath of these buildings collapses, you don't see 50 of them. You don't see 10. You don't see one of these concrete floors. But if you look at the actual collapse of the building, what you see is incredible explosions and the concrete pulverized and actually covering up most of these explosions. It's pulverized and sent out again laterally and covering lower Manhattan in a blanket 3 inches thick of concrete powder. That's where the concrete floors are. Mm-hmm. So they're not causing the collapse of this building either. It's caused by something completely different than 2/3 the weight of the building, which is gone, so it can't crush the building underneath it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny because the 9/11 Commission report, they talked about how the floors pancaked, but you just mentioned it's absolutely true that every floor below the floor above is designed to carry all the weight of the upper stories plus the weight of it, and it goes all the way down to the bottom. By the time you get to the first floor on a building like that, there's so much steel in there, and they are such heavy sections. The idea of a building pancaking is totally absurd. It cannot do that, because if it did, well, this is something I mentioned in my newsletter. If, in fact, the buildings collapsed the way they said they did, we would have seen every structural building code in the world rewritten to reflect these changes, because people just discovered that buildings can do this. There was not one single building code that was rewritten as a result of this collapse, was there?
Well, there were not structural codes
right,
that were rewritten right. that would keep a building falling at near free fall collapse,
right?
Which is what the Twin Towers did also, near free fall. Mm-hmm. It's falling faster and faster and faster. So if you think that could happen by some damaged columns from an airplane impact and normal office fires after they were started by jet fuel, which is all burned up in 10 minutes, the first 10 minutes, then we would have had at least, and there are similarly designed buildings throughout the world, and many that were very similar to Building 7 as well, but none of those have been remodeled, reevaluated. Mm-hmm. The only code changes that have been made as a result of the NIST's recommendations to the International Conference of Building Officials is the adhesion of fireproofing, because NIST made a claim that the fireproofing was knocked off by the airplane, making the steel more vulnerable to the fires. Mm-hmm. And they also made changes to the exiting systems to help occupants get out of the buildings faster and more safely. But the structural recommendations that NIST made were completely ignored, because that would have caused a vast increase in the expense of skyscrapers. And the rich people who build skyscrapers are in it for the money. They do not, they know their buildings are safe. You know, they know that these buildings were not brought down by airplanes and fires.
If I could ask a question here, one of my big problems with this, and I'm Tupper, and I've been on the Patriot Soapbox for over 3 years now since we started. And my partner and I, on our late night show, did several shows, and we read through the engineers and architects report when it first came out. And one of the things that I have a real difficult problem with is the idea. And I'm also a 14-year veteran of the United States Navy and flew aircraft. I'm not a pilot. I was part of a crew, but aircraft are made out of aluminum. Yeah, basically this flying tube of aluminum that's braced up with, structural bracing and things like that, but it's all, aircraft aluminum. How does an aluminum aircraft tear through large sections of the outer perimeter of this structural steel? I have a very difficult time. Those wings should have sheared off. The engine should have sheared off. There should have been evidence of those in the street. And that's before the fuel ignites and starts to take the building down, as per their report. I have a very, very difficult time with that.
Yeah. Let's talk about it. Because the way the towers are built, those 14-inch square steel tube columns on the exterior, which march every 3 feet, 4 inches around the building, first of all, they're designed to support the load of the building and to take some of the flexure of the building due to winds, for instance, or earthquakes. They are not designed to have a side impact. Each of those column sections are about 3 stories tall, and they are bolted to the next one above them with 4 bolts. So it is not impossible for them in a lateral impacting force to be sheared off those bolts. And if you look at the damage pattern in the side of the building, what you see is an orthogonal series of the tops of these wall sections in the case of the fuselage and larger wing areas, there was enough kinetic energy to push in those panels. It didn't shear off the steel itself.
But aren't those buildings designed to take a lateral hit like that?
Not the steel. No, they're designed to be punctured and still stand, because that's only a hole. This building is an acre in size. Each of those sides are 207 feet long. So even a jet plane is only going to put a hole in this vast network of very strong steel. And that's what we see as a hole. Mm-hmm. Now, in the case of the wingtips, you can clearly see in the photographs that the wingtips did not sever this steel.
Right.
It was the aluminum is soft, as you mentioned, and was sliced like an egg through an egg slicer at the weaker ends of the wingtips. So yes, I believe planes did hit the towers, and that the damage is consistent with the plane. And I don't think that we can intuit what a plane traveling 500 miles an hour can or can't do. It would be very difficult. For instance, you may not know that a ping pong ball can go right through a ping pong paddle. And this is proven on YouTube. You can actually search ping pong ball through a ping pong paddle and watch it because of the incredible speed, the kinetic energy rises dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's certainly a legitimate conversation to question how the whole fire scenario happened. I have to tell you, Richard, I don't know if you knew this, but I think you did. When I was in School of Architecture at Montana State University, the Twin Towers were being built at that time. And in our structures class, we studied the Twin Towers because they were designed to take multiple 707 hits and how those structures were put together. When my wife, when 9/11 happened, and my wife, I was away bidding a project, and I came home, I told my wife, I said, boy, there's going to be some amazing lawsuits over this, because those buildings, I know how they were designed, and there must have been some enormous shortcutting that was not part of the original design if those buildings came down the way they said. You're going to see some amazing lawsuits. Well, guess what? The government came in within a matter of days and paid people, the survivors, gave the survivors sums of money and made them sign a document that they would not file a lawsuit against the builders, the architects, or the building owners, which I found really, really interesting.
Yeah, or the airliners.
Or the airliner.
Yeah, but yeah, a lot of people didn't sign that document, and they have joined and signed the AE 9/11 Truth petition demanding a new investigation, the Jersey Girls among them, famous for forcing the Bush administration into a 9/11 commission, which they had been resisting for a year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to tell you, the whole process to me just smells to high heaven. I'm glad you're continuing to do this. Talk about the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. I think your group now is over 3,000 professionals have signed that petition and are part of your group, aren't they?
Yeah, more than 3,400 now. And they are taking a public stand, which is a risk to their reputation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody wants to be called a conspiracy theorist, and nobody wants to be applying for a federal job or contract and have somebody, you know, realize that there's this questioning of the government, which is necessarily a part of signing our petition and speaking out for a new investigation. But they take that risk nevertheless. And so a lot of people look at our petition and don't want to take that risk, or we'd have 10,000 architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, because we've heard this again and again. So this is a risk.
Well, there's always cognitive dissonance. There's always people who don't want to face the truth. And I have to tell you, I've got a niece and a nephew that are both architects that I've sent your information to 15 years ago. And 12 years ago, whenever, you know, the first DVDs came out. And they just don't want to go there. They just refuse to go there. In fact, I've sent it to a number of architect friends who I've worked with over the years. And most of them are afraid to look at the reality of the whole process, because it would mean that they would have to admit that our government may be doing things that are totally the opposite of what they want to believe.
Yeah, and I saw the in the film, I was reminded by the psychologists, and at the end of the film, it's so poignant that it's like turning our whole world upside down, coming to grips with this evidence. So many people will not even look at it. I have personal friends and family members who won't even grant me the respect, being an architect and having studied this particular subject for years, to actually look at the DVD that you just saw. It's like, excuse me, you'll talk to me, but you won't be willing to look at what I spent 2 years making. You know, I lose respect for people like that. And yet I remember, Dan, when I first came across this evidence in 2006, it was like I got hit over the head with a 2x4. I watched David Ray Griffin on an interview. I was driving my white minivan back home, or back to the office from a construction observation. And he was talking about a lot of this evidence that we just saw in a film and that we've been going over. And I'm going, what are you talking about? I'm an architect. I would have heard this. I would have seen it on CNN. Mm-hmm. You know, I was red pilled in that moment. That mm-hmm. was my red pill moment. And if for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, the red pill, of course, was taken by Neo, the star of the Matrix movie, which the Red Pill Expo is all about. So that is an annual or biannual
mm-hmm.
event mm-hmm. that occurs all around the country. And I know Dan and I will both be speaking there about me, about this evidence, of course. And it's called 9/11, The Final Verdict. And we'll be presenting on June 5th and 6th the evidence in a two-day event that is in Rapid City, South Dakota. So be sure to check that out on the website, their website, which is redpillexpo.org.
Wow, you're doing a great job. I have to tell you, I need to hire you to do some advertising for us, Richard.
Oh, it's an incredible conference. Mm-hmm. I get red-pilled every time I go to that conference. It was in Spokane. It was in Bozeman, your hometown there, and in Hartford, Connecticut, as you mentioned, and Jekyll Island recently, mm-hmm. where it was the biggest crowd, you told me. Yeah. So I missed that one.
Well, we'll make sure you don't miss this one because you are on the venue. I know that. Thumper, we've got a trailer for Richard's new video, 7, that he's in the process of bringing out. Let's play that trailer quick before we run out of time here.
I have it ready to go here. Just a moment. And by the way, Richard, I'm in Spokane. So that's where I originally hooked up with Dan when we did the Red Pill Expo here.
Well, thanks. And, Thumper, if you want to continue that discussion about the planes, I'd be happy to have lunch with you, you know, in Coeur d'Alene. That we can meet halfway. That'd be awesome.
Ah, you live in this area up here?
I spent a lot of time up here. I married a local Idaho gal. Ah. So most of my time is in Idaho these days. But our office is in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm in. Okay. I'm near Sandpoint.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Skied at Schweitzer many years. Very familiar. All right.
It's Let's famous. Get this,
yeah. It's a wonderful ski area.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's get this up on the screen for everyone here. Okay. Get it framed up and we'll be ready to go here in just a moment. All right. All right, everybody, here we go.
You didn't hear anything about the World Trade Center 7, not for a long time. And we'd never experienced prior to that day a steel frame building collapsing due to fire. It just didn't happen.
There was no excuse for rushing to remove debris from Building 7. There was quick decisions made about taking that evidence away. They only saved one piece of steel, and that piece of steel suffered some extreme temperatures.
Fire cannot cause that. There are other chemicals that were involved.
We did not find any evidence that explosives were used in the collapse of Building 7.
They ignored evidence, and it wasn't because they didn't know about it.
They seem to focus on the solution right from the very beginning and ignore all evidence that would have led them in any other direction. There was just this silence in the academic world about this subject. So we began looking around for someone that would be willing to undertake such a study. We ran across Professor Halsey up at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. He was very scientific about the way he approached this whole problem.
He wants to look at things from a very rational perspective, blocking all the noise out, which is really what is needed in this case.
If there is controversy, that means that not everyone's satisfied with the answer. If we can change that, if we can give the public and the engineers an understanding of truly what did happen, it's worth it to me to be able to do that work.
Okay, fantastic. Richard, I want you to have an opportunity to talk about a little bit about this film. Professor Halsey, I know that he spent 4 years studying this collapse of Building 7, very scientific, and this is irrefutable evidence. By the time you get this film out, it's going to be impossible for anybody to deny the facts that are built into this film. Talk a little bit about this project, and then let our viewers and listeners know how they can get a copy of it when it comes out, how they can become part of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
And actually, it is out now.
It is.
People can go to our website, and there's a link there to watch it on Amazon. The website is ae911truth.org, and there you can find it right there on the top. And you can also get the DVD, which is at our store now. And so this is a 45-minute DVD, a film made by director Dylan Avery, which many of you will recognize as the creator or one of the three creators of Loose Change 9/11, the blockbuster phenomena that woke many people up about the truth about 9/11, even in 2002, 2003, that soon, I believe it was, which was 3 years before I came along. So these kids, they were like 18, 19 at the time. And they've done an extraordinary job in their individual careers. And Dylan has won film festivals since then. And so we rehired him, if you will, to recreate this truth film and the story about the man who will be credited with having brought NIST down because this study, which the film focuses on, is going to every engineer, every engineering school in the country, civil engineering, and particularly structural engineering. And we're raising funds now to put ads on YouTube targeting engineers everywhere. So this is going to be seen by 2 million engineering type folks and the public in general too. We want to educate them as well along the way. It's also been sent to our congresspeople, all of them. We've had individual supporters donate $20 and they get three DVDs to send along with a letter that we write for them to their congressmen and senators. So we've got quite a campaign going out to get this this DVD out.
Well, you're doing marvelous work. And Richard, I have to tell you, you are a true American hero. You are doing something that I wish even a couple thousand Americans did the kind of stuff that you're doing. We'd have a different world. I want to thank you for your hard work and your effort in that regard. And I want to mention to our viewers as well that we are going to have the Red Pill Expo at Sioux Falls, South Dakota, at the Mount Rushmore Convention Center. It will be starting on the evening of the 4th, and we will be the 4th, 5th, and 6th. And Richard, you're going to be, I believe, previewing your film, because we're going to do a film festival that will start the day before the event. And we're going to feature your film as well as others that promote the freedom movement. So
fantastic.
I thank you so much for being our guest today. I can't tell you how much I look forward to the next time we get together. I hope it isn't in Sioux Falls, but if it is, that's fine. But I think we should get together before then. We'll do another promotion on the Red Pill, maybe on this network. So
be happy to, Dan.
Yeah. I look forward to it. And actually, I'm doing other programs as well. I'll talk to you about that as well. So, okay. Richard, thank you again for being our guest. And I see that the ladies are ready to take over. So, ladies, welcome. And I ask our followers to please join us again next week to connect the dots and join us on our Sunday program as well. And Richard, thank you again.
Man. Thanks, Dan. Thanks.
Thank you, Richard. And I put my contact information there in the Zoom chat.
All right. I see it there. All right.
And another little story that we dug up when we were investigating this a couple of years ago.
I'll take a look at it.
Getting stuff, not necessarily architects and engineer stuff, but more evidence that more is being hidden from that whole affair than people are being led to believe. So,
right on.
Amen. Amen. Well, thank you again.
If we are to move forward as a country, we have to clear up the past, and people have to have a clear idea of what really happened.
True. Right. Thank you.
So thank you for joining us today.